This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Welcome, welcome to the House of EcoShock. Last week, we tried a little shock therapy, a modest proposal from Dr. Jack Alpert to sterilize everyone to bring about rapid population decline. Birth permits, just 350,000 of them a year, would be awarded to the lucky few by lottery. Earth would head back down to the 100 million human animals it can support forever. For now, that's just dark science fiction. But the reality of overpopulation and overconsumption is not. Right now, the Egyptian people are celebrating just the possibility they might escape the tortuous grasp of the Pharaoh Mubarak. But there are no happy days coming for anyone in the Middle East. The number of people in most countries there has doubled since 1980, but the land base hasn't. About a third of the population is under the age of 24. Half of all adults are unemployed. Humans have outgrown the land base, and the food must be imported, always. There is no possible political solution for anyone, no matter how well-intended. We can say the same for Mexico in its drug wars, for India, for much of the world. As the fossil fuel runs out, gets crazy expensive, and wrecks the climate, we'll find out Earth cannot support 7 billion humans for long. And we are still expanding by 217,000 humans a day. It's time to drag this out of the closet. This week on Radio EcoShock, we'll take another crack at it. As part of the month of February, Population Speak Out. You can find one of the front lines, not in some faraway slum, but right where you live. Every child born in high-consumption countries in places like North America, Europe, or Australia consumes and pollutes hundreds of times more than a baby born in the poorest agrarian countries. We suck it all up, and we throw it all away. Can we change all that? Can we head back down the mountain towards sustainability, making our numbers match the true natural production of the land where we live? In this program, you will hear three voices with solutions, not drastic voices, but human ones with real choices. We'll kick off with Lisa Hymas, co-founder and senior editor of the most successful online green magazine on the planet, Grist.org. She'll tell us about Ginks, green inclined, no kids. Following Lisa, clinical psychologist Dr. Ellen L. Walker will talk about the good and the bad of going child-free. Can we be complete without kids? And don't miss our third interview. The granddaddy of the whole population movement, Dr. Paul Ehrlich, joins us. His 1968 book, The Population Bomb, woke us up. Now he's got a surprising new tool that could help us survive the multiple crises we face. Right now on Radio EcoShock. As the economy and fossil fuels and climate change worry us all, more young people are asking themselves this question. Maybe they will become ginks. To explain that, we have Lisa Hymas, the Seattle-based co-founder and senior editor of Grist, the progressive online magazine. Lisa, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. Nice to be here.
Well, please tell us, what is a gink?
Sure. GINK is an acronym that I came up with to describe myself. It stands for Green Inclinations, No Kids. And I just wanted to get people talking about the choice to be child-free. There's still a strong assumption in our society that all of us will or should become parents. And, you know, considering the environmental impact that each additional person, particularly each additional North American, brings, I think it's worth talking about whether we should all be having kids.
And about a year ago, you published the Gink Manifesto. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I did. It was kind of my way of coming out and saying that I'm child-free and that, you know, explaining my reasons. And certainly the environment was part of my thinking, but not the only reason. I have a busy career, a busy life. I'm happy with things as they are, and I don't feel the need to have kids. So in my case, not having children was actually an easy thing that I could do to help the environment. You know, I think often making the green choice can feel like a sacrifice or a hassle or an expense. In this case, for me, it feels like a really nice, positive choice for myself that also happens to be good for the planet.
Well, let me get a stupid question out of the way. Do you have something against parents or cute little kids?
No, and thank you for asking, because I want to make that clear, that I definitely think that for a lot of people, being parents is the right choice, and I totally respect that. you know, my own friends and family members who have kids. I'm excited for them. I'm happy to be involved in their kids' lives. I love to dote on my nieces and nephew. I just want, the same way that society supports parents, I just want them to support the child free as well.
I suppose we do have to get past that Victorian label of the spinster. Nobody wanted it. They were told they would be useless and alone. And we don't say spinster anymore, but are there new labels? And where are the social pressures on women to get busy reproducing?
Well, you know, there are a lot of pressures. I think a lot of it comes from our families and friends. As soon as we start getting a little bit older, it's like, when are you going to get married? And then when are you going to have a kid? And then when are you going to have the next kid? But there's also a lot of pressure in popular culture. You know, if you read the celebrity tabloid magazines, they're always showing pregnant celebrities looking glamorous and their kids looking stylish. And, you know, there's sort of a cult of fashionable motherhood. But I've been seeing some trends this past year pointing in the other direction. We have a few celebrities and people coming out and saying, you know, I've decided not to have kids, and that's the right choice for me. And a couple of them have even mentioned the environment as a reason for that. The actress Cameron Diaz and the actor Vincent Kartheiser, who's on Mad Men. So, and, you know, Oprah is probably the most famous child-free person out there. She's certainly an influential voice. So I think we're sort of starting in the culture to ask the question or create a little bit more space for people who do things differently.
How does not having a child compare with other carbon reduction schemes? Is it fair to ask that question?
Sure, it's a fair question. I mean, I'll say right at the front that I don't think anybody's worth is measured by their carbon impact. So, you know, that doesn't mean that parents who have kids are doing a bad thing. But, you know, there is an environmental effect. So there was a study done in 2009 by some statisticians at Oregon State University. And they concluded that for each child that an American has, it will increase their lifetime emissions by about 5.7 times or 570%. That's basically because you have a kid and they're going to grow up and be like you and consume energy and, you know, consume products, and then they'll probably have kids of their own. So the repercussions do go through the generations. And these same researchers also, you know, they put it that, you know, choosing not to have a child is about 20 times more effective than some of the other things that you might do in your life to save energy. So whether that's like driving a more eco-friendly car like a Prius or changing out your light bulbs or switching your diet to be lower impact.
Well, you've just made a man named Jack Alpert very happy. He's an engineer who is saying that we can never under-consume our way out of this crisis, that really population is the key, and we've just got to cut back our population. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think we need to consider both sides of the equation. I mean, you know, environmental impact is, in a sense, the number of people times their level of consumption. I think we need to work on both of those figures. Now, in North America, a North American uses far more energy and resources than someone in a developing country. So we have a much bigger impact, and it's incumbent on us more to reduce our consumption. So the average American has a carbon footprint that's about 200 times bigger than the average Ethiopian. So consumption certainly plays a role in it, for sure.
Well, beyond the environment or population, you've talked about real benefits of staying child-free. Could you talk about that?
Well, one of the interesting things that I've found as I've been talking to and hearing from other people is that a lot of child-free people actually work with kids and find that they have the energy to bring to their jobs because they don't have kids at home. So that includes a lot of school teachers, people who work in at-risk youth programs. I have one friend actually who works in hospice with children who are dying. That's a really intense job, and she's doing something really important, but she feels like she wouldn't have the energy and sort of the mental stability to do that if she had kids of her own. So I think that people who are child-free can find a lot of other ways to give back to society. I mean, on a self-focused level, you might have more time to put into your career or your personal relationships or your hobbies or just relaxing, even just sleeping. You know, being a parent, as any parent will tell you, is a very intensive endeavor, and I totally respect parents for taking that on. But I just want to encourage everybody to think before they have kids, so that children are a choice or a decision and not an assumption.
Right. I think we need room for perhaps a new class of woman, but I think there's also a question in the back of people's minds. They say to themselves, can a woman be complete without experiencing birth and child raising?
Right. I mean, and there are some people who say you can't. I guess I would strongly disagree with that. We all lead different paths in life. We experience some things and we don't experience others. And I feel like by choosing this path for myself, yes, I am going to be missing out on some things. I'm missing out on a lot of the experiences that parents have, but I will get to experience other things, whether that's spending time, writing for myself or reading or traveling or maybe nurturing the relationships in my own life. And, this is something, what I've been interested to find out as people have been communicating with me is a lot of men connect with this too. I mean, these days, a number of decades ago, men weren't that involved in child rearing necessarily. These days they are. So men need to think hard about this too, about whether they feel like they have the energy and the desire to be a good involved dad before they go down that path.
And there's kind of a double standard in the media. I noticed the criticism of Supreme Court Associate Justice Alina Kagan, and you've written about this.
Yes.
And it seems sort of like almost a veiled attempt to maintain male dominance by making sure that career-oriented women feel guilty or should get rerouted through these family duties.
Yeah, I feel like there are a lot of unfair expectations placed on women, and it's sort of, if you're not a mother like Alina Kagan, you could get criticized as not being, not having empathy, not really knowing what it's like. But then again, if you are a mother, you can be criticized for not paying enough attention to your kids while you're out in the workforce. So, I want to help us bust through all of that and accept women's choices, whatever they are.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is senior editor at Grist Magazine, Lisa Hymas, and we're talking about Ginks, Green Inclined, No Kids. Lisa Hymas, you are certainly not alone. According to the Pew Research Center, about 10% of older women didn't have kids in the 1970s, and that has doubled to nearly 20% of child-free women now. So I guess what is missing is that voice that you're attempting to provide, like, let's come out of the reproductive closet and assert a new class of womanhood. Would you agree?
Right. That's definitely what I want to do. Those are some pretty impressive statistics that I think might surprise a lot of people, that maybe one out of five women won't end up having a child. That's a lot of us, but it's still something that we don't talk about that much out in the culture. So that is what I'm trying to do, just get us to talk about it, let women or men know that they're not alone when they make this choice. I've heard from a lot of people who said, thank you so much for writing about this, for talking about this. I have felt really alone, and it's great to know that I'm not the only one.
And it's strange, after the supposed liberation that happened in the 70s, that here we are in 2010 saying, well, it's okay not to have kids. How did we get there?
I don't know. It's sort of, it is ridiculous that it's been this long, but we still have these expectations. I think, they're just built into the culture, and they're hard to get rid of. I like to think that we're gradually changing minds and getting there, but I think it's still going to be a little while before being child-free is as normal as being a parent.
Are you having fun with the Gink thing? Are people connecting with it?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely had a lot of fun with it. I've had a lot of responses from people, and I've had some positive and negative responses from parents, but some of them have been positive. They said, I thought about these things before I had a kid. I totally understand where you're coming from. A few months ago, one woman who also writes for Grist sometimes, she recently had a baby and contacted me and said, hey, let's write a piece together about how ginks and parents can get along, how we can all support each other in our decisions. So we wrote up a sort of a fun little piece about what to say or what not to say to folks in the other camp, sort of facilitate conversation and open this up.
And where do you see this going?
I guess I just hope that more and more of us will be talking about it. And I think this is a great year to do it because the world population is poised to hit 7 billion this fall. That's a lot of people. And it's about time we started talking more about the impact of population growth.
Well, you raise a really serious point, and I think it's how can activist women help beyond not having a child? How can we help stop this tide of overpopulation that threatens our happiness and our planet? Do you have some suggestions on that?
Sure. You know, one of the biggest things, I definitely don't support any coercive policies or anything like China's one-child policy. We don't need that. I mean, the first and most important thing we need to do is make sure that all women everywhere have access to contraception and to family planning services. There are an estimated 200 million women around the world who don't have that yet, you know, in a lot of poor countries. So, you know, the U.S. government funds some of those programs. International bodies fund them. There's some nonprofits and NGOs that work on that. I think we need to support all of those efforts. That's definitely key. And part of it is also not only giving women contraception, but making sure that they're empowered in their own communities, in their families, that they have education, that they have economic opportunities, all of those things. You know, most women, when they have options, would rather have smaller families and be able to contribute some to the economic health of their families. So that's sort of the big picture answer. On a more micro level, but that's not something that, you know, you or I can solve overnight. But one thing I did recently was write a post called 8 Things You Can Do About Population. And it was sort of looking at some of the things that we can all do in our own lives. Let's see, one of those things I mentioned was, you know, if you're a parent, don't pressure other people to have kids. You know, just let them make their own decisions. I suggested that we need to improve sex education in our schools, at least certainly in America. A lot of those programs, if they have them at all, are really terrible. And I think we could all agree that it would be better to have a lower teen birth rate. So the U.S. right now, even though the teen birth rate has fallen in the last couple of years, it's still higher than in a lot of other developed countries, particularly Europe. And I think we'd all be better off if our teenagers were better prepared, better informed about how to protect themselves.
Well, how can people find your articles?
Sure. Well, on grist.org, GRIST.org, you can search on population or search on child-free or search on my name, Lisa Hymas, and they should come right up.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and I'm honored to have as our guest one of the pioneers of online journalism, Grist Senior Editor Lisa Hymas. Lisa, it's been fun, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Having my baby, you're a woman in love, and I love what's going through you. The need inside you, I see it showing. Oh, the seed inside you, baby, do you feel it growing? Are you happy you know it?
Deciding not to have kids can be an emotional and social minefield. And what if you don't decide, but you just can't? Thanks to contraception, people today have more choices than any previous human generation, but not many tools or examples to follow. Here to guide us is Dr. Ellen L. Walker. She's a clinical psychologist, self-proclaimed child-free person, and author of a really helpful and rare new book, Complete Without Kids, An Insider's Guide to Child-Free Living, by Choice or by Chance. Ellen, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
First, the obvious question, why child-free instead of childless?
I felt really strongly about using the word child-free when I began to write my book because I think this is a topic that has so much negative stigma against those of us who aren't parents that I wanted us to all feel really good about our decision and not as if we were missing something.
Well, certainly to say childless already has the word less in it, and we don't need that. Well, you've not been a professional author until now. Why did you decide to write this book?
I decided to write the book because I was having my own personal struggles with the fact that I was over 40 and hadn't had kids and never really thought about it very much, but all of a sudden I started having these, oh no, what if I made a big mistake thoughts that just kept coming into my mind. And I realized that if I, who I'm a psychologist and feel like I have really good insight, if I was having these struggles, that other people must be also. So I just started talking to people about their own experiences, and I found that they wanted to share and talk.
As you say, people without kids are not all the same. They arrive by three different routes. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Now, probably the most common way that people end up being child-free is kind of by accident. And ironically, that's the most common way that most people end up being parents also. Over 50% of pregnancies in the United States are not planned. And so I think most of us who don't have kids, we might have become parents had we married a certain kind of person, or had we gotten pregnant, or had, you know, just had life turned out differently. So that's most of us. Then there are some women in particular, and men as well, who say that they never wanted to have kids, and they've known this since they were teenagers. And that's a small group of child-free adults. And then, of course, there are people who desperately wanted to become parents and just couldn't make it happen. Either they couldn't get pregnant, or they never found a partner that was the right person to have a child with, and they didn't feel comfortable being a single on their own parent. So that's the third group. And those folks tend to want to identify themselves as childless.
Early in the book, though, you hit the target with that simple question women are asked all the time: do you have kids? And what happens if the answer is no?
I find that there's kind of a silence whenever I say I don't have kids. People don't really know what to say after that. I have to kind of take the ball and change the subject or turn it over to their own children. Somehow it seems like it's our responsibility to try to make everybody feel okay then.
Well, Dr. Walker, part of my radio focus this week is overpopulation on this small planet. And I'm thinking, what if we reversed that situation? What if people were embarrassed to have kids and had to explain why they did?
That would be pretty funny. I think that would really be amazing and wonderful. And, you know, I'm not sure that the idea of them having to explain why they had children, but to be able to, before they get pregnant, to be able to demonstrate to themselves and to others that they're ready to take on the responsibility, they've got the financial means, they've got the emotional energy, they've got the willingness to make a lifelong commitment no matter how their child turns out. I think that would be a great place for us to be in our society.
And I was interested in your look at media pressure to have children. Let's talk about what we see on the screen. What are the messages?
The message is quite clear. You fall in love, you get married, and you have a baby within a year. That is the message in almost all movies that we see. If we don't see that in a movie, it's amazing. And I've had a few movies recently where that has not been the message, and I just about fell out of my seat.
Well, maybe we're seeing a bit of a change. I mean, there are TV shows featuring singles like Seinfeld or Sex and the City or even The Big Bang. So perhaps, you know, society is slowly catching up to this idea.
It is. It definitely is. There's some new data out showing that 20% of women that have reached the end of childbearing, which is around 45, 46, are not mothers. And that came out of the UK, those numbers. But I think that's really exciting to think about the idea that maybe within another couple of generations, we might actually have as many people who say, you know, I don't think I want to have kids, as are saying they do want to have kids.
But, you know, even in the UK, and I was astounded when I read this in your book, the experience of columnist Polly Vernon writing in the Observer newspaper just 2 years ago, this is pretty recent, and she dared to publish her decision not to have kids, and she got loads of hate mail. Are we free to talk about this publicly?
If you've been online in the last year Googling child-free or childless, you will see a lot of back and forth commentary on it on both sides. There's a lot of negativity. I know that you recently interviewed Lisa Hymas, and she's a great example. If any column she writes, which in my opinion is very neutral, she gets bashed and accused of, you know, trying to be a child hater, or it's almost like if you say anything about being okay with being child free, parents think that you hate them. You're criticizing their lifestyle.
Are people still feeling discrimination personally when they are child free?
Absolutely. The workplace is one great example of that. That if you don't have kids, you're often expected to pick up shifts on holidays or the weekends so that parents can be with their children. Parents get to leave work a lot more for soccer games or children being out sick. That's one area of huge discrimination.
And we have the inertia of government encouragement to have children. In Canada, women still get a monthly check called the baby bonus. And I was appalled to learn that in some U.S. states, people who are child-free but unemployed, they have no safety net. They can't even get welfare. How can we balance this out better?
I think that as the child-free population begins to form more of a solid group, you're going to see a lot more vocalization about this. We pay the largest percentage of income tax. And as you say, a lot of states you can't get health care if you don't have children, but the instant you get pregnant, you automatically do get health care and a monthly check. I think it's only a matter of time before we're going to be at a place where people are saying, no, why should you get a tax break for having children instead of paying more tax?
Yeah, I guess because, you know, we've got to pay for the schools and all the costs of raising children socially. I wonder if part of the problem is our lack of time for cultural adjustment. Before the pill came along in 1960, there wasn't as much choice, and as a result, we have few positive myths or stories or cultural narratives about being child-free. What do you think?
I think you're right. And it's culturally, it's something that we're trying to wrap our mind around. What are some positives about not having children? And I constantly am doing this with my girlfriends whose daughters are getting married, and they're already talking about how excited they are about being grandparents. And I'll say, well, what if she's not planning on having children? And these are girls who have master's degrees or PhDs and are clearly very focused and have invested many, many years in their schooling and their careers. To automatically assume that they're going to try to put being a mom on top of all of that, I think it's unfair.
I wonder, maybe this is programmed into our brains or our tribal history that we demand children. And really, is there a biological clock?
I think there is. And I think there's a biological drive to nurture, to caretake, to love. And that's one of the things I talk about a little bit in my book, that it's one thing to have that natural need, but to go a little bit beyond that primitive drive and to say, okay, I have this need. What are some various ways that I might meet it, including have a baby of my own or become a first grade teacher or get really close to my next door neighbor who has a couple of children so that I can spend a lot of time and be very involved in their lives? That there's more than one way to meet a need.
We'll be right back in just a minute with more Radio EcoShock.